Welcome to Happily Ever After is just the beginning. Keeping your relationship not just together, but happy, and we mean truly happy, is part art and part science.
There were days where we thought we wouldn't make it out, but we stuck it out. Today's our day.
You've come to the right place.
Today's our day.
Here's your host, Leslie Dorries.
As a relationship and marriage professional, as well as the child of divorce, I understand better than most the impact of ending a marriage. It is this experience that makes me cringe when I hear about divorce parties or conscious uncoupling. Sometimes it is necessary to end a relationship. Most of the time, with a bit of knowledge and effort, it isn't. And while it takes two people to consent to get married, it only takes one to decide to get divorced. Now, I live in North Carolina, where a couple must be separated for 366 days before one spouse can file for divorce. Unfortunately, they never have to do anything during that time to see if anything can be improved. They don't even have to take a co-parenting class to learn how to minimize the impact of this life-changing decision on their children. So, is there an argument to be made for making it a bit more difficult to get a divorce? Well, that's what I'm going to be talking about today with my guest, lawyer, author, and co-founder of the Coalition for Divorce Reform, Beverly Willett. Beverly, thanks for coming back on the show and continuing to talk about what is truly a life-changing decision.
It is my pleasure to be here. Thank you, Leslie. And let me just say quickly that I agree with everything in your introduction. And one thing that I will note about North Carolina that is actually a positive thing, and that is that you have this longer waiting period.
Uh-huh.
Most states used to have, I don't want to get into the weeds here, but most states used to have a reasonable waiting period before you could file for divorce, because it only makes sense. It only makes sense if you're in the heat of dissatisfaction, anger, whatever, that you take a pause before you blow up the family.
Right.
So North Carolina is pretty unique in having that waiting period, because most waiting periods across the country now, they have done away with reasonable waiting periods, and they're very short, and that is a big problem. That's
right.
For another day, but I just wanted to add that.
Well, I appreciate it. And you know, you wrote an article titled, and I love this, "Blame Women for High Divorce Rates That Hurt Women More Than Men." So, you know, what was the impetus behind writing this piece?
Oh, there's a lot there, but you know, and I know we certainly don't say blame, and we certainly don't say blame women in our culture, so that was kind of woo.
Yeah.
But sometimes we need to stop and think about, well, what does that mean? I guess, first of all, the impetus was the fact that January is known as Divorce Month.
Yep.
And that means that is when the highest numbers of filings for divorce occur. And so I wrote an article for USA Today a few years ago just to get people's attention to the fact that this is what it is.
Uh-huh.
Because most people don't know that and don't focus on it. And I always want to kind of be out there and keep this on people's radar, radar for couples and marriages. So I was thinking about it and the fact that I had written something a couple years ago, and what can I do to write something fresh about Divorce Month, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because we do sugarcoat it, and one of the points that I think I made in that article was that, you know, we have Christmas, you know, especially for couples with children, we have Christmas, and we don't want to hurt the children's feelings. We want to spare them to get through the holidays. Well, what are we sparing them if we blow their lives apart the next month? I mean, that's the first thing. So I was just thinking about that and thinking, well, what else can I say about this that's fresh, okay? And then two more things struck me, and I just knew I had to write something, and this article got published at the very, very end of January because I was struggling to sort of put my thoughts together and find someone to publish the article and get it out there while it was still January.
Uh-huh.
And so the second thing that struck me was that not only do we have Christmas, you know, all the holidays, and then lower the boom, and then I was going into the stores, and we're looking toward Valentine's Day, mm-hmm. and love and commitment and engagements and people getting married, and it just kind of, boy, I had a sour taste, okay? and then one more thing, and that literally is that I was going out with a friend for dinner, uh-huh. and I was trying to hook one of my necklaces that one of my daughters had given me for Christmas.
Right.
And so I couldn't swing the chain around because it was mm-hmm. a short chain in the front, and I couldn't hook it, and my fingers were getting in the way. I finally did after about 15 minutes, and I realized that I have this jewelry that I can't wear anymore because I can't hook the mm-hmm. the chain on the necklace. I can't hook the bracelets anymore. And I got to tell you, I know there's a lot of big stuff, but the little things that have impacted my life along with the big things,
uh-huh.
I just kind of blew. My head blew, and I said, this is the way in. And the fact is that here I am a woman. I was divorced not by choice.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking about the fact that I know lots of women who are divorced not by choice, uh-huh. but women are the ones that file about 70% of divorce actions.
Yep.
And it's one, it's appalling, and two, I'm thinking to myself, do they not know what the outcome is going to be? Have they thought about this? Do they not know what Pandora's box have they opened? And so that was
right.
That was all of the impetus behind this article, this short article.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and this is, you know, this is one of those things where, I mean, I get it. You know, if we're in a relationship that is challenging and painful, you know, it's like nobody wants to be in that. But part of this is the answer simply to end it? And, you know, and if we have children, then, you know, we don't really get divorced. We still have to deal with this person. And, you know, and it opens up a huge Pandora's box, because I've had many clients who've come in and, you know, they're divorced, and whether it's the father or the mother, doesn't really matter. But they talk about, you know, not being able, you know, something's going on in the other house that they don't like. And it's like, yeah, but you don't have any say anymore. And you know, and this idea that children are resilient and they'll get over it. I mean, you know, I said, yeah, children can survive car accidents too, but you don't drive your car into a wall at 60 miles an hour on purpose. I mean, you know, these are these things that, you know, I get it. And you just normalizing and making it easy, but also the fact that it is unilateral. And, you know, when I tell people, because I will share that women file most of the divorces, even though supposedly women are better at relationships, okay, that shocks so many people. And, you know, when I work with men, I tell men, it's like, if your wife has stopped talking about your relationship, you're in trouble, unless you know it's a really good relationship, because she's gone underground and she's plotting to get out. But you said that, you know, women filed most of the divorces. That is, by the way, documented. That's fact.
Yeah.
So, but you said, but in the piece, you also say that divorce hurts women more than men. So how are most women affected by this decision to, I want out?
So, you know, I think there're really two or three, I mean, more than two or three levels of this. You know, we can
right.
talk, we can talk economic, we can talk emotional, mm-hmm. physical. I mean, we have a wealth of research that we didn't have back in the 70s and 80s when these no-fault divorce laws were passed. We have a wealth of research about how divorce impacts men, women, and children on all levels, which I just documented. Physical problems, emotional problems, mental illness, and one of the biggest ones is poverty. And mm-hmm. That struck me because So I guess basically household income for women declines by an average of 41% after a divorce. And that's pretty well documented and established too. And what's interesting about that is that that number has stayed relatively the same since the 1980s, since
Wow.
this whole wave of no-fault divorce. One would think that that might change over time as there have been reforms, and I don't want to get into the weeds on this, but reforms in terms of alimony reforms, equitable distribution, which is fairer to women than it used to be 40 years ago. But that's not the case. And, you know, I have written about divorce so much, and I guess sometimes I speak until I'm hoarse, and I think I've been writing about this for about 10 years, and I know you have been, and so many people have been talking about this for years and years, and people still don't know about it. I mean,
right.
It's funny because there's a local competition in our town, and it's nationally gotten national press. And some people in the community don't even still know about it. We had it last week, and I'm still like shocked. And it's the same thing. How is it that people don't know about it? How is it that women don't know about it? And this whole thing that you said about telling the men, you know, I think it's this, you know, there's so many layers and levels to this in terms of just instant gratification, in terms of how we deal with problems.
Uh-huh.
How we deal with suffering, how we view suffering. We don't think pain and suffering of any kind is a good thing. So we look at how we deal with it through all of the pharmaceutical ways and non-legal ways. We don't think that's, and you know, I would say in my life, something that I never realized either, but the most headway that I've made in my life in terms of things that I have realized to hopefully gain a little wisdom is through suffering. I mean, I've just had to just go through it and learn through it because usually it's there to teach us something.
Well,
and
yeah.
So I think we need to learn that these forks in the road with couples and their relationships, it means that there's an opportunity here for something more beautiful, something we can learn, something greater, and we're not willing to take the opportunity to pause and investigate it.
Well, and I'm so glad that you bring that up because, you know, we talk about, you know, everything's all about, you talk about Valentine's Day and all this stuff, it's like, you know, we're all about the romance, we're all about the beginning. Right. And
right.
Then people get, they plan for the wedding because people used to say, do I do premarital work? I said, with anybody interested, but most of the time they're so focused on the wedding that they don't think
right.
about the marriage. And then when they get into the marriage and then, you know, as I tell people, a good marriage is boring from the outside. Nobody is going to make a movie about a good marriage. It's like, okay, snooze fest, right? We have to have the drama, right? So we have and they ride off into the sunset, go into this black hole, and then show up later as the War of the Roses or a Marriage Story or whatever these things are, and we never understand what goes on. And, you know, and people don't share about their marriages. It's private, you know, so they're not getting any information, and the information that they do get, marriage is hard work. You have to sacrifice. I'm like going, stop, no, no. You know, but we have these romantic, you know, oh, well, if they loved me, they would just know the mind reading school of marriage, which I always found, you know. And so people don't know how to navigate the natural differences that show up so that they think that suddenly if we're struggling, either we're doing it right because marriage is supposed to be hard work, or, you know, we don't know how to navigate this, and so people go, okay, well, let's just throw in the towel. You know, you're always like, starter marriages. I'm going, okay. I mean, you know, yes, we can learn by experience, and I think that's important, but sometimes it's like you're talking about that we don't know how to manage this. And so we just blow it up, which if we don't have kids, that's one thing. But if you've got kids, you can't walk away.
Totally different thing. And, you know, this just, you're talking about this, you know, the honeymoon period, and we don't want to talk about marriage because we're getting married, and it's all great and beautiful, right. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, now the wedding's over. I mean, I think about that, too, looking forward to an event, and then all of a sudden it's like, wow, I've been looking forward to that for a month, and it's history. But this reminds me of something, and that is when my ex first left, and, of course, if you read my writings, as I know you have, I tried to save my marriage, and even when that didn't work, I had too much going on to manage a household and basically raising two kids by myself to think about dating. Plus, I didn't want to bring another person into the household since my children were already dealing with a new stepmom. I just thought that's too much for them. So I just, I wasn't dating. But I remember a friend of mine saying to me, she said, oh, my gosh, you get to date now, okay? That was one of the first things that she said to me.
Right.
And years later, thinking back on the few dates that I've had, because I don't find a lot of men out there, but I think, what a nightmare. And here she's thinking, oh, how wonderful this is. Now, let me put this into context for you. She's a person who had a she was working, but working out of the house, so she wasn't working full time. So she had basically a wonderful husband who I knew was part of our friendship
group of
circle.
Friends, right?
He worked very hard. He helped around the house. He helped take the kids to here and there. And they had a second home. And I mean, I'm telling you, I would have taken Mr. Boring.
Yep.
You know, and she's thinking about this fantasy life that I'm going to have. Meanwhile, all her bills are covered. They've got, as I said, a second home. They go on vacations. He helps around the house. And I'm just thinking, I think so many women still live in that head. You know, I wrote an article for the Institute for Family Studies last year, I think it was, or a year and a half ago, because there was an article in the New York Times by this woman who basically was in a low-conflict marriage. She couldn't, she didn't want to pick up the socks anymore off the dirty floor, and she filed for divorce, and the article was extolling the wonders of divorce and how happy she is, and she gets to walk the dog and take long walks, and she doesn't have to deal with the kids all the time. My heart was breaking thinking every moment I didn't get to see my kids, it was taken away from me. My heart broke. And here was the clincher of the article. She also now has time to play her ukulele.
Well, okay. I'm a big proponent of we don't have to give up who we are to be married. In fact, I think that's a dangerous thing if you do. But the idea, and this is one of those things, and this was my personal experience, where nobody asks the children. And, and it's sort of like, okay, so if you said to the kids, do you want me to be happy or not? It's like, okay, okay. And by the way, happiness is, self-generated, and it's also a temporal state. We can't be happy all the time. And, again, I don't think we should be miserable in our marriages, but there is an answer to changing that. And so, but I want to take the time to remind listeners that this is Happily Ever After is just the beginning on webtalkradio.net. I'm your host, Leslie Dorries, and I'm having an important conversation about divorce with lawyer, author, and co-founder of the Coalition for Divorce Reform, Beverly Willett. And if things aren't going the way you would like in your marriage, I'm going to tell you you're not alone, because nobody has to go to marriage school. And I have discovered over the years that a lot of this is due to that lack of knowledge about what makes relationships, specifically marriage, work. And many people see only two choices: remain unhappy or get out. There is a third way that most couples don't take: See if it can be made better. And this is what I do. And if you are struggling, I can help. I invite you to take a moment and get in touch with me either through email at Leslie, L-E-S-L-I, at foundationscoachingnc.com. That's F-O-U-N-D-A-T-I-O-N-S, coaching, N as in Nancy, C as in Charlie.com. Or you can reach me by phone at area code 919-924-0463. Again, that's 919-924-0463. So I want to get back to this conversation about divorce. So Beverly, what is your argument for instituting some kind of divorce reform? Would this lock a person into a dismal marriage?
Well, again, you know, let's I'll get to that, but the fact that you use the word lock, you know, I think so much in our culture, but we could talk about this for an hour, it revolves around language, how we use language, charged language, like lock me in, take away my freedom, take away, okay. So that's a whole other thing, and I think it's dangerous to use words like that, and I think sometimes when we use words like that, we provoke arguments and we get off the topic of what we're trying to talk about, okay? Because it puts people in a defensive mode, and I'll talk about that in a minute in terms of divorce reform and how it's impacted divorce reform, and people use charged languages like that, So we lose focus on what we're talking about. We're talking about marriage. We're talking about, I believe, the most important institution in our culture. And, you know, if, agree with me or not, but people always say, well, look at science, look at research. Let's look at it. Marriage is the most important institution in our culture for the stability of children and for their future well-being. Hands down, that is not debatable. That's just not debatable. And to say, well, you're shaming, you know, single moms and all that. I don't want to hear that. It's not about shaming anybody. It's about telling the truth. So we need to tell the truth, and that is that marriage is good for children. Marriage is good for society. If you look at communities in our country, where communities are doing well, people are thriving, people are doing well, there is low violence, low crime, you're going to find healthier marriages and healthier families, okay?
Right.
That is a fact. Those are facts. So we want to help this country get better. We want to reduce all of the problems that we just throw money at that are not going to do very much. We need to focus on marriage, and that's the truth. So
right.
I don't want to hear stuff about locks and whatever. Okay. But to go back to your question, and now that we've talked about charged language that's not helpful.
Right.
I think divorce reform, there are two prongs to this. And I guess when I started out working with the Coalition for Divorce Reform, which is a bipartisan effort, by the way, in an effort to bring together people from all parts of the political spectrum and views, because we wanted to make some inroads in divorce reform to help.
Okay.
To help parents and to help couples. That was the first thing that we wanted to do. And to also educate people about marriage, educate people about divorce.
Uh-huh.
But as I have studied this over time, what I have realized and what I have written about is the fact that our no-fault divorce system, we have no-fault divorce in 50 states, but in 48 states, it's unilateral. And what that means is that one spouse, it takes two spouses to tie the knot, okay, but one spouse can say, I'm out of here. And they can say, I'm out of here for whatever reason. Or they don't even have to get a reason.
Right.
They just say, you know, we're incompatible. We are incompatible.
Irreconcilable differences.
Irreconcilable differences. And their wish is granted.
Uh-huh.
Their spouse cannot defend the lawsuit. Their spouse cannot be heard in court. Their spouse cannot dispute the other spouses claim that the marriage is irreconcilable, they don't get their day in court, they don't get witnesses, the judge, pursuant to these laws in 48 states, the judge is ordered to grant a divorce. Ordered.
Wow.
Compelled. So I don't even know why we need a judge in that situation.
Yeah.
We don't even need a judge.
Right.
I mean, literally, somebody could go to court, file that complaint, let's the divorce granted, then they turn it over to a judge so that the parties can argue or whatever about custody and the money issues, because
right.
That's in a sense what is done. So for me, that is unconstitutional. That violates due process. And so I've been writing a lot about that because I think divorce reform must start there. Yes, I'm all for, in the meantime, some other type of reform that we will have some education, some longer waiting periods. But I think we've got to get rid of these unconstitutional laws. That's the biggest impediment, I think, because I think once we get rid of those, then people are going to maybe come to the table and start talking.
Right.
And that's been the problem, is that nobody wants to come to the table and start talking. And I think that is, unfortunately, that's what's going to be required.
Right. So in your article, you actually said that women are some of the biggest opponents to changing the current unilateral divorce laws. Why do you think that is?
Well, you know, I think there's a reason, and I think there's a reason that they give.
Okay.
Okay. I think, and I don't say that this is basically 100%, because I don't know people's intentions.
Right.
I don't want to ascribe intentions that I don't know about.
Correct.
So I won't say it's universal. But I do believe that, and the reason that some proponents and opponents, I should say, of divorce reform give is that that domestic violence would go up. That this has been a great thing for domestic violence, which we definitely needed to address in this culture. Absolutely.
Correct. Absolutely.
And most of the legislators, you know, because I've been involved in testifying and writing letters for some of the reforms that have been out there. I mean, legislators who are mostly men, they hear that a bunch of women come in and say, we're going to have our whole system of, you know, domestic violence, every stride that we've made, it's all going to become dismantled. And I got to tell you, they run away. They don't want to go near a bill. And I'm not even talking about a no fault bill. I'm talking about a bill just to institute some kind of a pause, some kind of a waiting period, an educational system so that couples who might need help and want to reconcile can get it. And so that parents can get some information about the harmful effects to their children and what to look out for. And if they still want to go ahead with the divorce, fine, but arm them with some information. So that is one of the things. They come in and they say that, and that really sort of shuts down a lot of talk about even the most minimal divorce reform.
Right. And, you know, and I mean, and I recognize and that some marriages cannot, should not stay. But one of my mentors, Dr. Bill Doherty, who's a professor of marriage and family therapy at the University of Minnesota, did a study many, many years ago. He was working with the legal system because he knew a lot of the judges. And he did the study and found out that at least 30% of the people who were going through the Minneapolis divorce courts would pick another option if they thought there was one, right? So people get on the divorce superhighway, and again, one person, and this is the, and so he came up with this. God, hate the name of it, discernment counseling. Hate the name, but it's actually to see if, you know, to have a conversation with these people to figure out, is there a way forward? Because, you know, in order to get a different result, we have to do things differently. And so the lack of knowledge, both about the, you know, what divorce actually means, and, you know, the true impacts on everybody, because it's everybody who's associated, your friends, your family, your kids, your coworkers, everybody is going to be impacted by this, at least during the process of it, and in many cases for many years afterwards. But, you know, people, you know, I would ask people, it's like, you know, have you done any work on your relationship? Well, yeah, we went to counseling. How many times?
Right.
Two. And it didn't work. It's like, but part of the reason why it doesn't work is because people wait too long because they think nothing can make it better. And, you know, and they truly buy into the fact that everybody's going to be okay until they're not. I mean, I had a client, she was in a physically abusive relationship. She needed to get out for her safety and her girl's safety. And it was, you know, and it was horrendous. I mean, and she needed to do this. I mean, this was a good decision, but it's still, I mean, she has struggled financially because, of course, her ex wasn't going to, you know, basically fought her tooth and nail. And, you know, and it was just really hard. And, you know, it wasn't easy for my mother. My parents got divorced in the basically at the beginning of this no-fault divorce. You know, it impacted me. It impacted my siblings. It's actually even impacted my family because it impacted me. You know, so it's so these things. And you know, we're now on second, third, fourth generation divorces. People don't even, you know, and young people today don't even want to get married because they haven't seen it work. And they think that they could get all the benefits, which, by the way, people, marriage increases your health, your wealth, and your overall happiness if it's a good marriage. Right. It is one of the fastest way to build wealth in this country. And all these people are doing what I call marriage light, meaning they're living together. You know, they're doing all these things except for the actual marriage, which is where the protection comes in. But you know, it is this weird disconnect. So what are
you?
Go ahead.
Let me just add one little thing to all of that too, because I had said that, you know, why women are opposed to divorce reform, why they say they're opposed to divorce reform. This study that came out of Stanford University, okay, that talked about women filing for divorce close to 70%, okay. They also looked into the why of this too. And it was something that I sort of intuitively thought, but this is something that came from their findings. And they said that this is related to, you know, women feeling marriage is oppressive to their freedom, okay? And it's related to gender inequality issues and all of this. So, you know, that's what I thought too. You know, it's like all of these issues that have held women down too long, you know, in terms of their equal pay and voting and violence and all of this. It's almost like we're taking control now and no one's going to hold us down anymore and we're going to have complete freedom to do whatever we want. I mean, that's really, I think, what we're talking about here.
Right.
You know, nobody's going to put, but the key is, okay, yes, there are all of these issues out there, okay? And we're going to have our own name, too. We're not going to take his name, and we're going to, I mean, all of that, fine. And believe me, I agree with you on the domestic violence issues.
Right.
Absolutely. Women need to get out of those dangerous situations, 100%. But the way, you know, not to handle low-conflict marriages, the way is not to butcher the family. That's not the answer. So your freedom and your happiness.
Right. Because again, you're building your free, I mean, you know, and again, marriage done right does not mean you lose who you are. It does not mean you have to, you know, but again, it's like, you know, the languaging is so important because part of the reason why I have an issue with marriage takes compromise and sacrifice is because commonly you think, What does compromise mean? You give up something, I give up something, we meet somewhere in the middle, neither one of us is happy. Great!
Right.
Sacrifice. I just totally, you know, it's like, it's the giving up, right? It's like, I have to give this. It's like, no, we're making choices, right? We're making decisions. And by the way, if you don't want to get married, please don't. But if you're going to have,
exercise your freedom not to get married. Yes.
Right. I mean, but if you're going to have children, understand what that means, you know, and again, everybody, I mean, I'm like this too. I'd rather have absolutely no bumps in my life. Can everything just be smooth sailing? That's not life, people. And marriage is a great teacher. It helps us grow up. One of my favorite quotes, I think it's by a man named John Barth, who said, marriage is our last best chance to grow up. Because it It requires us to learn things. It requires us to question ourselves. It requires us to think about other people, right? And as you're saying, this is what builds a community, right? We're not all just out in the woods by ourselves, you know, living off the land. Most people can't do that. we're meant to be in community. And, you know, and again, you know, my nieces, when my daughter got married, they were all about the wedding, but they didn't understand why my daughter wanted to get married. Because they didn't see any advantage to it. And I think that's one of the challenges. And, what kind of things are you thinking about? And this is going to have to be really fast, but in terms of what would divorce reform look like?
Well, as I said first, I think we need to get people to the table, and so we need to get rid of no-fault divorce.
Okay.
that's a dream, but you know what? Dreams come true.
Yep.
The other thing is that I will just refer people to the website of the Coalition for Divorce Reform, divorcereform.us, and that is there's the Parental Divorce Reduction Act. So it's too long to go into right now, but basically that is to educate parents about the effects on children, the effects of divorce on themselves. And offer, you know, support for marriages that are in trouble. They have communication problems, financial problems. Oklahoma has an interesting statute that mirrors that. And we did talk to legislators there a few years before it was passed. So people can take a look at that act in Oklahoma and see how it works in theory. So those are some things. And I think what is important to remember is that even if no fault is gone, we still have fault-based divorce in place.
Right.
And we can strengthen those laws if they need strengthening. So that in appropriate situations that we agree on as a culture where people need the opportunity to be able to get out of the marriage contract, that can happen when there are situations of cruelty, when there are situations of abuse, when there are situations of abandonment. I've seen, I think I was just looking at the Oklahoma statute, habitual drunkenness, the spouse is incarcerated. I mean, all of these kinds of things.
Yeah, you're not
are
saying,
still in place.
Right. You're not saying no divorce under any circumstances, which is where, you know, it's like, you know, again, nuance, people.
Exactly.
Nuance.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And so I think that's important because people just hear like, oh my gosh, I won't have any options. All my options are gone.
Right.
No, not at all.
Okay. So Beverly, thank you so much. And I want to say, it's like, if you're a frequent listener to the show, you know that I don't think miserable in marriage should ever be used in the same sense. But most marriages that succumb to divorce are not high conflict. They could be improved instead of ended, with all the challenges that entails. So what would you like to improve in your marriage? And more to the point, what actions are you taking to make that happen? And hopefully one of the things you're doing is to continue listening to this show. So until next week, stay loving.